from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulvedo, and we begin with this prediction. State health officials say the proposed Republican health care bill in Congress will cause costs to rise, particularly in Northern California. The California Report's April Domboski explains why.
Under the Affordable Care Act, people get financial assistance based on income, age, and where they live. But under the GOP plan, that assistance is based only on age. That means a 62-year-old living in Los Angeles, who makes $30,000 a year, would see his health premiums go up about $70 every month under the Republican plan. But if that same 62-year-old lived in San Francisco, his premium would rise by more than $450. Peter Lee, head of Covered California, says that's because the Republican plan doesn't consider the fact that hospitals and doctors charge up to 40% more throughout Northern California.
In Northern California, there's a more concentrated delivery system with a few major providers. In L.A., there's more diversity of hospitals, medical groups.
Which means there's more competition. Lee says Obamacare tried to level costs, giving people up north a higher subsidy to pay for insurance.
They are not taking that money home. They are not taking that money to the bank. They are using that subsidy to make health care affordable.
Lee says the Republican plan to lower subsidies and tighten the criteria for who gets them will mean fewer people buy insurance. For the California Report, I'm April Domboski.
After the election of President Donald Trump, organizations that recruit and train women to run for office have reported a surge in applications. Now, California has had its first election since that presidential race, but that surge of applications has not yet translated into actual candidates. From KQED's Politics and Government Desk, Katie Orr reports.
This month's elections in Los Angeles County provided the first glimpse as to whether women's anger over the victory of President Trump would translate into more women running. The answer? Not so far. Mike Madrid is with Grassroots Lab, which compiled data from the LA elections.
What we're seeing is a lot of energy and excitement manifesting itself politically and a lot of national organizations and state organizations pushing for female candidates to run for office. That's not happening, at least in this first test.
Of the 260 candidates running for municipal offices in L.A. County, just 70 were women, about 27%. Of the women running, less than a third either won their race or advanced to a runoff. That mirrors historic trends in California. At all levels of government, women's representation tends to top out below 30%. Candidates for the LA races had to start the process of running in December, and Madrid can't say whether this one election is a fair test of things to come.
You can say that it was too soon to test, or you could make an equally compelling argument that the sooner the better, because the shock, the outrage, the anger, the pain that we're hearing about so much is more acute and all the more reason to run.
Madrid says upcoming elections in April, June, and November will provide a better trend line to evaluate whether more women are actually following through and running for office. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
Let's go now to Los Angeles. That's where 74-year-old former L.A. Sheriff Lee Baca awaits a verdict on charges of federal corruption. Jurors are continuing their deliberations today, as KPCC's Annie Gilbertson reports.
Baca is accused of conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and lying. It all started back in 2011 when the sheriff's department discovered the FBI was investigating their deputies. Deputies then hid an inmate informant from the FBI. Later, they approached an FBI agent at her house and threatened to arrest her. Nine people have already been convicted or pleaded guilty in connection to the scheme. Some of them testified against Baca, their former boss. A former captain said they were following the directions of the sheriff. But the defense says Baca never had the goal to obstruct the investigation. Rather, he wanted to work with the feds. For the California Report, I'm Annie Gilbertson in Los Angeles.
Now, if convicted, Baca could face up to 20 years in prison. Beginning today, parents will get a much more detailed look at how well their child's school is doing in educating their students, as the California Report's Anna Tentakulis tells us.
For years, schools were ranked under the state's Academic Performance Index. Each campus was rated based on how well students did on standardized tests. But the number didn't offer parents much of an understanding of what was going on in the school. The new school dashboard system being rolled out today does that by using color-coded charts and graphs.
I think a parent will ultimately be able to get their head around it.
That's Samantha Tran with the advocacy group Children Now.
So it's an ability to look at a number of different things that we value and care about in public education, and then providing that information in a way that hopefully people can understand and then use.
Test scores and a number of other factors will now determine school success, including graduation rates, parent engagement, and whether students are prepared for college or the workforce. Blue and green marks on the dashboard show a campus is doing well. Those falling behind will show orange and red.
When folks look at the landing page, it's simple, but the status and change report is complicated.
Kathy Morrison and Elliot Lopez are school officials at Sacramento Unified, and they're looking over the dashboard for their district. Like many educators in the state, they like using more than just test scores. But they worry some low-income families may not be able to access the information if they don't have a laptop or Wi-Fi at home.
One of the challenges that we will have to face is making this tool available to those families.
One of the limitations of the dashboard is you can't compare schools. California's new accountability system emphasizes that all schools should improve every year. But Samantha Tran with Children Now says the state still needs to figure out how it will identify the lowest performing schools and what kind of corrective action is needed.
Federal law says that we need to focus on closing gaps in achievement. And while this dashboard will highlight if certain groups of kids are behind, the way we set the standards, it basically says any improvement is good.
State education officials admit the new dashboard tool is a work in progress, and they're open to tweaking how the information is presented so the public can compare how different schools stack up. For the California Report, I'm Anna Tentakulis.
Fake news, alternative facts, travel bans, reports of Russian connections. The daily drip, drip, drip of political news from Washington can be overwhelming. In fact, so much so, mental health professionals across California are reporting a stream of patients coming in with anxiety and depression, get this, related to news from this new administration. Jenny Gold of Kaiser Health News has the story.
Wally Finkston in San Mateo says he's been feeling pretty awful since President Donald Trump was elected.
Primarily angry. Little depressed. It's been stressful. It's definitely not something I'm used to.
Finkston, who's 35, says he's not a Democrat or a Republican. He voted for George W. Bush, but also Barack Obama. He's also a news junkie. But these days, he starts feeling a sense of dread first thing in the morning.
You lay in bed right before you get up and take a shower. You read like a couple articles or something like that, and then you kind of get along with your day. And it has a great way of waking you up on the wrong side of the bed.
Even just going on Facebook makes his heart beat faster.
I have high blood pressure. I mean, that's just a medical condition. I have hypertension. And I could tell this was not a good thing. You know, like this was not helping me.
Finkston has a busy career as a recruiter. He decided to shut down his Facebook page. But not knowing what was going on made him anxious.
I kind of cheated a bit. My dog has a Facebook account, too, that I ended up using just to kind of see what was going on with friends and that kind of stuff.
Politics-induced anxiety is so common, it's been given an unofficial name, post-election stress disorder. Nearly three-quarters of Democrats report that the outcome of the presidential election is a significant source of stress for them, according to a survey from the American Psychological Association. Michi Fu is a psychologist outside of Los Angeles.
I have clients on both sides of the aisle that claim distress, either feeling ostracized, not being able to lament or celebrate the election results.
She says her Democratic patients especially are coming to the office feeling hopeless and angry.
The sense of hopelessness can lead to what some people would consider symptoms of depression, and that would be things like disturbed sleep, maybe a change in appetite. Maybe it'll lead to some social withdrawals.
And some Republicans are upset, too. In the same APA survey, a quarter of Republicans reported that the election is a major stressor.
They feel misunderstood. They they feel like they're being labeled as racist and bigots.
But many Republicans feel relieved, if not uplifted, by the new president's flurry of executive orders and appointments. Kenneth Liu is active in the San Francisco Republican Party.
I don't know why a lot of people are so stressed or so excitable over a candidate who's pretty much doing what they said they were going to do.
Liu, who's 39, says he's actually been feeling less anxious since Trump took office.
I've been able to take a nice deep breath and relax a little bit, knowing that we now have people on the federal side who are going to bat for us and for our viewpoints where we've been silenced for the last 8 years.
For those who are struggling with post-election anxiety, psychologists recommend limiting the time you spend tracking the news on social media or cable TV. Instead, volunteer for a cause, call a friend, take a walk, read a book.
Derby, sit. Sit. Derby.
For Wally Finkston, speak. His dog, Derby, is the speak. Best stress relief.
Speak. Derby. That's a buff. Derby. Speak.
He says sometimes a few kisses from his dog are all he needs. For the California Report, I'm Jenny Gold.
Support for the California Report comes from Robotham International, providing strategic tax, accounting, and business advisory services to global families, entrepreneurs, and venture-backed companies. Robotham.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. And the James Irvine Foundation, honoring the recipients of the 2017 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards. Learn more at irvine.org.
Today is March 15th, and it was on this date in 1848 that the Californian newspaper in Monterey printed a small story about a found gold mine near Sacramento. That wire report led to the California Gold Rush, which, in turn, led to the building of the Panama Canal, the killing and forced relocation of California's native populations, and the establishment of San Francisco as a home for the LGBTQ community. And on that last point, you can read about how the Gold Rush turned gender norms upside down in the 1840s by going to my Twitter page. I'm at JohnLGC. That's the California Report for Wednesday, the Ides of March, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulveda. Have a great day.